Welcome to Ancient Future Faith with Dr. Chris Alford, pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community in Sacramento. Just what is ancient future Christian faith? Join Chris each week as he talks with special guests about a refreshing renewal in evangelical worship and spirituality that's helping many believers get in touch with their ancient Christian heritage. Now, with another look at how the road to the evangelical future runs through the ancient past, here's Dr. Chris Alford.
Well, hi, folks, and welcome back to another edition of Ancient Future Faith. My name is Chris Alford. I'm the host of the program and the pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith Christian church in Sacramento, California. In the studio with me today is one of my bestest friends in the whole wide world and my colleague in ministry, Dr. Ellen Kohler. Hi, Ellen, and welcome back. I was just thinking, it's been a while since you've been here in the Ancient Future Faith studios, yeah?
Yeah, hi, Chris. It has. It's been at least a year and a half since I was in the studio with you. Now, we've done other conversations over the phone, and I think we did a Zoom one for the radio, but we haven't done one in studio, so this is quite a treat.
We've been on Zoom about 827 times. Well, maybe not quite that many, but we've been on Zoom a bunch, I guess, huh?
It does seem like it, yeah.
Ellen, you are the pastor for liturgy and worship at Epiclesis Church, and all through the COVID, we were doing worship together. Well, during the lockdown time, especially, we were doing Zoom together, yeah, so we saw each other across our computer monitors, but I got to tell you, it's really good to have you live and in person right here in the studio with me today. Really glad you came.
It's good.
This month, Ellen, we are hosting, well, it's a pretty big deal. Yeah, we're hosting a New York Times bestselling author, and I think it's safe to say that we're all pretty excited about it.
We are very excited to have Rod Dreher with us at the end of the month for our retreat this year. Now, we have a retreat every year, sometime during the month of October. This time it's a little bit later than it usually has been in the month. Mm-hmm. But this year we have Rod Dreher coming to speak to us. He'll be with us for an entire weekend, Friday evening, starting at, I don't know, 6 or 7, I think?
Well, folks are going to gather at 6:30, and then the retreat session itself begins in earnest at 7.
Right, and then all day on Saturday, mm-hmm. and he'll be with us on Sunday in worship.
And folks, when you hear this interview, at least I'm hoping there are still a few spots left. Although, Ellen, before we went on the air, we were talking about how slots are filling up quick, so folks are going to want to get those reservations in. And you can do that by zipping over to the Epiclesis website. That's epiclesis.org. Ellen, it might be worth mentioning how we got introduced to Rod Dreher. I know that he is known to probably many folks in the audience through his, blogs and writings, and he's been a journalist for some time, and at least a couple of his books have been important to us and likely others as well.
That's right. Well, a couple of ways I can think of. The first is that one of our congregants gave to you a book, The Benedict Option, which was an earlier book, I think from 2016 or so, that Rod wrote. And we looked at that and studied it and have used a lot of those ideas in developing our own cloisters, a kind of a small group, iron sharpens iron, soul friendship kind of small group. Anyway, so we became acquainted with him through that. And then he was a colleague with one of our old Ancient Future Faith Network friends.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. John Burtka. And so that was a really interesting and kind of a neat connection, a mutual friend. And so we felt kind of like we knew him by the time that we became in conversation with him earlier this year to talk about perhaps doing a retreat here.
Yeah, somebody said, hey, why don't we just try to reach out and see if he might be interested in coming? And I said, okay. And we did. And so the rest is, as they say, history. And he's coming. It's a rare thing, I think, probably, to get someone of his stature to come to your neck of the woods. And we're just as pleased as could be. And I guess the excitement of that is to be seen in, among other things, the fact that so many people are responding to this. We've had something like 3 reservations every single day. And the only thing that's going to stop, I guess, now is the capacity of the room itself where we're going to be holding this. So again, folks, you ought to get in those reservations as quickly as you can. The book that we're going to be concentrating on in the main would be the book that we are also taking the title for the retreat from, which is Live Not by Lies. Ellen, you want to talk a little bit about the title of that book, where it comes from, and then it might be a good idea for us to talk a little bit about what in the world a Christian dissident is, and why in the world would somebody in, say, North America even be remotely interested in that topic?
Well, the title of the book comes from the title of an essay by the Russian novelist Alexander Solzhenitsyn. That name might be familiar to people. He was a very prominent writer and novelist of the middle to later 20th century. He was actually exiled from the Soviet Union. And one of the last things that he wrote that was published before he left, and Rod talks about this in the preface to his book, Solzhenitsyn said, "We can't allow ourselves to live by lies. If we live by lies that are told us or lies that others are trying to impose upon us, then we're not true to anyone, not to ourselves, not to our country, not to our community, not to our God, not to our faith, not to anything." So that's where Rod has taken the title of the book.
Now, the subtitle of the book is A Manual for Christian Dissidents. So I suppose we ought to talk a little bit about what in the world a dissident is, and can a Christian be one of those things? But first, as you think about that, Ellen, I should mention that you're listening, folks, to a conversation with Dr. Ellen Kohler. She is my friend and colleague. She's the pastor for liturgy and worship at Epiclesis. I'm the pastor of the church, and we're talking today about a retreat that's coming up at the end of October with New York Times bestselling author Rod Dreher about a book that he's written called Live Not by Lies. I mentioned, Ellen, just before the break there that the subtitle of the book is called A Manual for Christian Dissidents. And I guess we ought to talk a little bit about what in the world that means.
I imagine that we all have our ideas about what a dissident is. I know for me, before really trying to dig into what Christian dissidents might be, I would think a dissident is someone who doesn't agree with something that's going on in their politics or their society, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. they're going to complain. They might march about it. They might write editorials or whatever just to express their displeasure and their criticisms.
Or maybe take up torches and pitchforks, right?
Sometimes. Oh, perhaps, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, let's march with those. And so that idea, I think, is pretty prominent in people's minds. But you did a really interesting thing a couple of weeks ago in the sermon at Epiclesis. You looked specifically at what the word dissident means and where it comes from.
Mm-hmm. Dissident, when you take a look at the etymology of the word, what it means, it comes from the Latin, which when you break it down means to sit apart. And when you think about it, that really is pretty Christianly, if I can use that word, because as Christians, we are in many ways called to sit apart. We take a different view, don't we, in a lot of ways, with how the world views things. Paul says that we put on the armor of God and then we stand. A dissident is one who sits apart. And Christians are not called to be insurrectionists, right? I mean, that was one of the things that Jesus was very specific about, especially in that time in the garden mm-hmm. when the Roman soldiers came after him with swords and clubs and et cetera. But Christians have some things that we have to stand or sit apart about, especially in today's culture, right?
Right. And, you know, one of the things that I so appreciated that came up in the conversation that Sunday a couple of weeks ago at church is the idea of apartness. We are called, we are set apart. That's what being sanctified means. You mm-hmm. are set apart. You are
made holy.
We are made holy by Christ. He has redeemed us from the curse of the law. We sit in that position now. We are seated with him in the heavenly places. I love that verse from Ephesians. We are seated with him now in the heavenly places. But there are also other kinds of verses. Oh, for example, in Psalms, it says, "How blessed is the man or the one who does not stand in the way of sinners nor sit mm-hmm. in the seat of the scoffers." You know, those kinds of things. So we don't sit in the same places as the world does. We sit from a different vantage point.
It occurs to me that if we are Christians, if we are called by the name of Christ, then in many ways, we are already called to be dissidents. We are called to be sit-aparters. We have been called to be set apart. In doing the research for this particular book, Rod Dreher spent a number of months, even I think years, going around to former Eastern Bloc countries and interviewing former Christian dissidents. Now, these were folks who were behind the former Iron Curtain. And when the Soviet Union had control over life in former Eastern Bloc countries, Christians had to do a lot of their work underground. Speaking of interviews, folks can go back to the Epiclesis podcast page and check out some interviews that I did with Cornel Mich. He's a former Christian dissident who lived and worked in Romania under the best-selling author dictator Ceausescu, and talks about some of the work that he did as a dissident then. Similar kind of thing we're talking about here. And in his work and interviews with those Christian dissidents, Rod Dreher was talking with them about what they see in, say, North America, in the United States, and asking them, all right, what do you see here? Are there places and times in, say, modern-day America that you see things that look familiar? And Ellen, they said, yeah, you guys need to really be on the lookout for a kind of soft totalitarianism that may be coming your way. What do you make of that, Ellen?
Well, let's start with totalitarianism first, okay, and then talk about soft totalitarianism.
All right.
So the scholar Hannah Arendt, Jewish writer in the middle of the 20th century, saw a lot of things in Nazi Germany, wrote a lot of books and critiques of what she saw there, has some really interesting signs of totalitarianism.
All right.
She calls these pre-totalitarian signs, and this is what she writes.
Let's make sure we get that. She was looking at, say, Nazi Germany and Russia, and she was identifying what she called pre-totalitarian signs.
Yeah, this comes from her 1951 book, The Origins of Totalitarianism, right? Her definition of totalitarianism is, she says, totalitarianism makes every aspect of life political.
Oh.
Doesn't that not sound familiar?
Yeah.
It not only seeks obedience from the people, but attempts to force everyone to welcome their own oppression. We must internalize the ruling ideology and make it our own.
Yeah.
That feels very, very familiar.
Yeah.
So here are some pre-totalitarian signs that she saw.
Okay.
Widespread loneliness and social atomization.
What does that mean, social atomization? If that means what I think it means, then surely COVID has only contributed to that.
Yeah, there's a term called anomie. It's that we feel anonymous and kind of a malaise about everything, but we also feel like we're an atom. We feel like we are just one.
Separated.
And alone.
Yeah.
Separated apart. Not set apart. Separated.
Yeah.
Separated, externally separated. Not something that we chose or that was good for us. Like, not the kind of set apartness, but it's a separated out.
Got it.
Arendt goes on. A loss of faith in institutions and hierarchies.
Wow.
All of the old sureties have lost their power and their authority.
Mm.
She goes on, a desire to transgress, pressing out the boundaries.
Wow.
Just for the sake of pressing out the boundaries.
Yes. That right there alone is something that is so prevalent in our society these days.
It is. She goes on, a rise in power and dominance of ideological thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on all sides. Everything becomes ideology. And if I'm thinking in terms of pre-World War II Germany, the ideologies were all over the place and people held to the ideologies with a firmness almost a religious fervor.
I was going to say religious fervor, sure.
She goes on, the increased use of propaganda, and it becomes more and more media and consumerist driven. She goes on, the value of loyalty to a person or ideology more than expertise.
More than expertise. Loyalty to a personality or person more than expertise.
Loyalty to a person or an ideology more than expertise. And then her final observation is the politicization of everything. And I think in current 21st century America, everything is politics.
Yeah. So when you think of totalitarianism, your mind maybe goes to being tortured, you know, or the gulag or Left Behind novel series or something like that. But what she's suggesting with this idea of soft totalitarianism is not really anything particularly behavioral, but rather aspects of society that are precursors that maybe give entree to totalitarianism. Do I have it right?
I think you do, but I think we need to add a little bit more.
Okay.
And that is the whole totality. Everything funnels into one narrative.
Yeah.
And if one diverges from that at all, then one becomes a danger to the totality, the political structure, to the ideology. And so everything within the politics and the society, the culture, must follow along with that one narrative. And so we live in a time where social media makes everything available. Most anyone can be publicized. Most anyone can have a platform to say something, even if it's only a very small Twitter feed or their TikTok feed. My mind goes back to a really interesting set of critiques from 1931, 1933. There was not a Christian philosopher. His name was Walter Benjamin. He was German-Jewish, actually. But he was looking at the culture, and he says, we're living in a time where everyone can be publicized. Everyone can have an opinion, and everyone can voice their opinion. Now, if that was true in 1933, how much more now? Because, I mean, everybody has a Facebook. I mean, I even have a Facebook and I was like the last person ever to do that.
Yes, and the volume of the voices is nearly equal, some more than others.
Yes, the expertise doesn't really matter.
That's right. And that goes back to the issue of loyalty to person or ideology more than expertise.
Mm-hmm. And so probably most of us have had the experience. This is one thing that Rod mentions in his book as well, is that an aspect of soft totalitarianism would be when we're in a public situation, a social situation, perhaps maybe a professional gathering of some kind, and we're in conversation with someone and suddenly we're asked something about our own personal beliefs. It could even be a political opinion. It doesn't even necessarily have to be having to do with our faith.
Right.
We drop our voices just a little bit. So it's only my conversation partner who can hear me and not someone on the other side of the room, because we just don't know what their opinion will be or what the ramifications of that might be. That's an example of soft totalitarianism. And we give in to that without even really thinking about it.
Rod was telling me a story recently about one of his readers who works for a Fortune 500 company in New York that was requiring, though not forcing, its labor force to sign on to a manifesto that had to do with critical race theory or some similar LGBTQ manifesto kind of a thing. And though the employees didn't have to do that, and this one particular Christian person said that they just simply could not do that in good conscience, the folks who did not sign on to that did not get a particular lapel pin. And the problem with that was that everybody who did sign on to it did get the lapel pin and wore it every single day, which means that if you did not sign on to it and you were not in the club, so to speak, you don't have the lapel pin and you were ostracized. And that was a kind of a soft totalitarianism, because it means that you're not being obedient to the narrative. You're not falling in line with the political code, so to speak.
You haven't towed the dominant narrative line.
Folks, you're listening to a conversation with Dr. Ellen Kohler. She's my friend and colleague, the pastor for liturgy and worship at Epiclesis. We're talking about a wonderful retreat with bestselling author Rod Dreher. He is the author of Live Not By Lies, coming to Sacramento on October 29th and 30th for a retreat with us. Find all the information at epiclesis.org. We're going to be talking at the retreat, Ellen, about what it means to be a Christian dissident. We've been called to be set apart, to sit apart. That's what dissident means. Ellen, in our remaining moments, what are you hoping to get out of the retreat? I guess in some ways it could seem a little heavy, but for me, I'm hoping that it's going to be ultimately, well, encouraging and uplifting even.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that, having given these definitions and characteristics of soft totalitarianism and totalitarianism as a whole. it could seem a little heavy, a little bit dark. And we've looked at how that might resemble where we are right now in our culture. But one of the things that we are looking forward to is answering the kinds of questions about how do we go about just in our daily lives. So we're going to be looking at some of these questions also. And Rod includes these in the preface to his book. Why is religion and the hope it gives at the core of effective resistance? To me, that's just hopeful.
Yeah.
What does the willingness to suffer have to do with living in truth? That seems a little heavy. That seems maybe a little off-putting, but I know it's going to be really, really encouraging.
Say that one again, would you?
What does the willingness to suffer have to do with living in truth?
Wow, good question.
Why is the family the most important cell of opposition? How does faithful fellowship provide resilience in the face of persecution? And how can we learn to recognize totalitarianism's false messaging and fight its deceit? And then one thing that I would add, and I know we're going to include this throughout the whole weekend, what can we learn from other believers, those who've lived through this before, and from the faithful saints of old? One of my favorite of the ancient fathers is Gregory of Nazianzus.
Yes.
Now, he was the Archbishop of Constantinople in the 4th century. He was known as the Trinitarian theologian. Part of his early priesthood was under the Emperor Julian the Apostate from 361 to 363. Yeah. He is called the Apostate because he rejected the Christian faith and wanted to return Rome to some of its earlier pagan religious forms and rituals. So Gregory wrote invectives against Julian because of Julian's rejection of the Christian faith. Of course, Julian's response was to persecute Gregory and others who were his critics and to go after them. In 363, Julian died in a battle, and his successor was a Christian follower. So that particular battle didn't last Gregory that long, but he did know a thing or two about being a Christian dissident. And after that, he turned his attention to the heresy of Arianism and to developing the theology of the Trinity.
Right.
But he's got this wonderful quote that so speaks to where we are in this conversation.
Good, good, good. Share it.
Will you be afraid of danger in persecution or of losing the most precious thing you have, Christ? Perish the thought, for such fear isn't for the sane, and such an argument argues insanity. If I may say so, it is incautious caution, a trick of the evil one. He is darkness and pretends to be light. And when he can't prevail in open war any longer, he lays secret snares. He gives apparently good advice, although it is really evil, to defeat us by a trick and trap us in his plotting. In this instance, he is clearly aiming at defeating us. This is his character. He will never cease from duplicity as long as he sees us pressing in towards heaven from which he has fallen. O beloved of God, why do you not recognize the plots of your enemy? For the battle is against him and is concerned with the most important interests. The interests you are fighting for are great, and you need great stability. Protect yourself with the shield of faith. The enemy fears you when you fight armed with this weapon. Therefore, he wants to strip you of the gift to make you unarmed and defenseless and defeat you more easily. He attacks every age and every form of life. Everyone must resist him.
Ellen, always a pleasure to have you with us in the studio. Thank you for that marvelous quote. And thank you for taking the time to be with us again today. Bless you.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to speak with you about the things we love most.
My guest today has been Dr. Ellen Kohler, and we've been talking about a wonderful retreat coming up at the end of the month with author Rod Dreher. You can find all the information at epiclesis.org. And in the meantime, until we gather for another edition of Ancient Future Faith, I want you to be thinking about this. Surely the road to our Christian future does in fact run through our ancient Christian past. The Lord be with you.
Thank you for joining us for another look at Ancient Future Faith. There is a refreshing wind of renewal blowing through the evangelical church as more and more worshipers turn for inspiration to the rich language and pattern of the ancient church. And they're rediscovering classic Christianity and learning to draw strength from a deep well of time-tested truth and tradition. Want to experience Ancient Future Faith for yourself? Join us for worship at Epiclesis in Sacramento on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. in the chapel at 4600 Winding Way. You can contact us by calling 916-572-9113 or online at epiclesis.org. That's 916-572-9113, or on the web at epiclesis.org.
Hey folks, one more really important word before you go. On the last weekend of October, the 29th and 30th, Epiclesis is hosting a retreat for the whole Christian community featuring best-selling author Rod Dreher. He wrote a marvelous book called Live Not by Lies, a manual for Christian dissidents, and you simply don't want to miss this amazing opportunity. Find all the information at epiclesis.org. That web address is epiclesis.org. It's going to be an amazing retreat, and I'd love to see you there.